Okay, hello everyone. We're gonna start the seminar now, or the webinar at this point. So hello everyone in the US, Israel, Palestine, and other places in the world. Welcome to this latest installment of Conversations with Israel and Palestine, hosted by Partners for Progressive Israel. Conversations with Israel and Palestine is a series of informational webinars that brings voices from Israel and Palestine to an American audience, providing an important link between progressives in the US and in the world. My name is Dr. Anwar Mahajni, and I'll be the moderator for the next 60 minutes. I'm originally from Umm al-Fahim. It's a town in the northern part of Israel. I'm currently living in the US. I work as a visiting assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Stonehill College in Massachusetts in the US. So before we get started, let me note that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American nonprofit organization dedicated to the achievement of durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and they also believe in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all Israel's inhabitants. Partners seek to deepen the American public's understanding of Israel's complexity in order to enhance its ability to advocate for a progressive Israeli future. So I will now introduce our speakers. The bios, I shortened them a bit, but Thayer and Fadi, if you want to add anything, please feel free to do so later on in the conversation. So Thayer Abu Ras is a PhD student in the Department of Government and Politics and a fellow at the Guildenhorn Institute for Israeli Studies at the University of Maryland, College Park. Thayer's research is focused on politics of identity, particularly the evolution of Jewish political identity in Israel. Thayer is also a Palestinian citizen of Israel. Fadi Shibata, I hope I pronounced that right. He holds an MA in conflict resolution. He is currently co-directing the Equality Policy Department of SIKUI, Association for the Advancement of Civic Equality. As I said, I shortened their bio. They both have engagement in civil society and NGOs, but they can tell you more about it when we start the conversation. Let me just add that the discussion will go on for about 40 minutes, after which we'll be answering questions from the video audience. I encourage you to type in your question at any time. All you need to do is look at the bottom of your screen. So if you move the mouse on the screen or touch the screen, you'll see a bar that appears at the bottom, and there's an icon that reads Q&A. So click on the icon and type your question in the small box that appears. So the webinar won't disappear or be disrupted. Please note that the viewer microphones are turned off, and questions can only be asked this way. So we can only answer your question if you type them. Otherwise, we won't be able to hear. Okay, so to start the conversation, I have a question for both of our panelists. Again, thank you, Fadi, and thank you, Thayer, for agreeing to participate in this and share your experience and expertise with us. My first question relates to identity. So how do you identify in relations to the state of Israel? Why do you identify this way? And how do you think the way you identify fits in within the general population in Israel, within the Arab community in Israel? So I think we can start with Thayer and then move to Fadi, if that's okay with you.
Sure. First of all, good afternoon, everybody. I'm in the DC area, so it's still afternoon here. looking forward to this discussion. I personally identify as a Palestinian citizen of Israel. Now, identity obviously is a big issue in Israel. It's not only a big issue among Jewish Israelis, but also Palestinian citizens of Israel. You'd get many different kinds of definitions. But I think it's in the realm of the mainstream definition of what we call the Arab community in Israel. Why do I identify that way? I guess mainly because that's how I feel. I mean, on the one hand, I feel an ethnic and cultural tie to the Palestinian people in general. But at the same time, I also feel, I guess what we can call a civil tie to the state of Israel, contemporary Israeli culture, whatever that means. And we can delve into that, I guess, a little bit more. But I mean, that's who I am. And it's also, I guess, one of our problems, right? That on the one hand, our ethnic community has been in a war, I guess what you could call an existential conflict with the country that we are citizens of and we contribute to in many different ways. So yeah, I'm a Palestinian citizen of Israel, I guess.
Oh, now thank
well,
you.
If I'll start from the end, so it's the same definition, and I will explain why. For me, identity is, we can answer this question administratively. Obviously, we have the Israeli IDs, we are Israeli citizens, you know, we are different from our Palestinian brothers in the West Bank and Gaza, or Palestinian refugees by our civil status, but for me, this is administrative. And maybe I'll answer the question of my identity the way I see it, based on my family background. My family comes originally from a village that was destroyed in 1948, and we were expelled 3 kilometers away. And I was born in the neighboring village 3 kilometers away, and our lands were confiscated. Now, part of my family remained within what became Israel in terms of borders. Part of it is in Qalqilya and the West Bank. Another part is in Tul Karim, and other part is in Jordan as refugees. So, and there was a period after 1948, there was a danger of moving us to what's Tul Karim refugee camp today. So if we were moved there, there would be no question of defining us as Palestinians, West Banker Palestinians, and now in the Israeli general discourse, people kind of, like most of the Jewish population wouldn't like it when we define ourselves as Palestinians. And I think just like explaining the family background can clarify that, you know, the Palestinian people were divided into the different groups after 1948, which is the base, let's say, starting point to understand the reality today also. So yeah, back to your question, I define myself as a Palestinian citizen of Israel.
So I'm just going to follow up really quick on that question. Have you ever, you said that sometimes the Jewish community doesn't like it when you identify as a Palestinian. So do you encounter resistance from people within Israel, Arabs, Jewish, and as well as people outside when they hear the label Palestinian and then Israeli citizen? Because for me, I noticed that if I'm around the Arab, like Arabs from Arab country, and I mention Israel, everyone gets upset with me. And if I'm around the Jewish community and say Palestine, everyone gets upset with me. So I don't know if you guys have similar experiences with that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, in Arab countries, I find, I think it changed a little bit in the last years. There is more and more awareness about the Palestinian minority within Israel. The situation used to be that people in the Arab countries will see it as Israel, Palestine, Palestinians in Palestine, Jews in Israel, and then they wouldn't understand what is this creature of Palestinians in Israel. But I think there is more and more awareness of it, especially after the media, the Arab media channels developed, and there is a good coverage of the reality of the Palestinians within Israel. I don't find it difficult defining myself or explaining the situation when I'm abroad. I do find it kind of complicated because it's not just kind, where are you from? I'm French or I'm German. I'm a Palestinian citizen of Israel. Oh, what is that? So yeah, in this sense, it needs more explanation. It's not just like I'm from there.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, there's much more. I also feel that there's much more understanding today. People are much more aware of this community. I mean, I remember going back maybe 15 or 16 years ago, I was in a high school in the United States, which was an international high school, and many Arab students who were with me simply did not understand what that meant. Many people actually thought I was what we would call a Mizrahi Jew. When I tell them I'm a Palestinian citizen of Israel, many of them thought, oh, you're the Arab Jew, or whatever that is supposed to mean. But I think it mainly has to do with the, I guess what you can call the media revolution in the Arab world. All of a sudden, people from all around the Arab world are able to hear different voices, and all of a sudden you'd have people coming out and speaking in Arabic from Haifa, Jaffa, or Jerusalem, and people now understand more than they did in the past. And yes, obviously it is a massive complexity, but I guess it's an identity complex that we have come to learn and to live with. Hopefully one day we will be able to somehow get over it, but at this point we haven't, and it's definitely ingrained within us, if I can say so.
Yeah, I feel like when I tell my students where I come from, they think I'm a unicorn that came out of nowhere. They don't understand that Palestinians live inside of Israel. And I think it's fascinating, though. But there is, of course, as you said, you see that people are more aware of us than before, and that's good. So I'm going to move on to the next question. The next question is going to take us to the challenges facing Palestinian citizens of Israel today. So what are the challenges that are facing the community today? And how do you think these challenges shape the relationship of the community with the state of Israel? And whoever wants to start can go first. All right, Fadi?
I think like the complexities, well, I'll connect it to the previous question, actually, because I think the complexity in our identity is not, for me, my identity is clear. The complexity is the perception of Israelis of what should be an identity of somebody living in Israel. And it's also the way it's perceived outside. Because finally, we talk about the conflict as a complex issue and so on. The story is quite simple in its basis. There was a group that came from outside because of different historical reasons, because of the Holocaust, because of racism in Europe and so on. But the fact is that there was a group, ethnic group, that came from outside and took the space of the local population, whatever you call them, if you call them Palestinians or Arabs or whatever. And connecting it to your question, we are acting in two parallel spheres. One is our rights as citizens in the civil sphere within Israel, within the current reality, in the here and now. And the other is part of the Palestinian people that were divided to different groups. And we are one of them that remained within the borders of Israel with different set of rights that are better than Palestinians in the West Bank, for example. We are citizens. We go to civil court. They go to military court. We have more freedom of movement while they don't. There is discrimination within Israel, but it's not comparable with the Palestinians in the West Bank or Gaza and so on. So there is the national issue. We're still living in a reality of conflict. And there is also the civil issue and the daily life, education, infrastructure, improving, advancing in life, improving our daily life.
So I will kind of dive into the question per se. What are the challenges facing Palestinian citizens of Israel today? I would argue actually that the Palestinian community in Israel is at a very interesting crossroad in our history. On the one hand, I feel that there is greater economic, and focus here more on economic and to a lesser extent, cultural integration within Israel, especially among the youth. And the youth here are more important because about 60% of the population is under the age of 30. This is a young population at the end of the day. But at the same time, we're witnessing greater exclusion from the public sphere and more acceptance of racism within Israeli society. This isn't obviously to say that racism did not exist before. It did, but it wasn't highlighted as it is, in my opinion, today. So we're really working within this different, within this oxymoron, if you want. On the one hand, greater integration, greater personal and even community success stories on the one hand, but at the same time, we're talking about greater, more a political atmosphere that is more unwelcoming towards the community. And that is basically, at least at the macro level, the main challenge that we face today within Israeli society. And trying to overcome this oxymoron, in my opinion, is probably the main issue that we're going to have to deal with and try and find ways where we will be able to overcome this issue. And we can dive into specific policies in a little bit if you want.
Yeah, so that would be my next question. You can actually talk about specific policies that influence political engagements and the status of the community in Israel. So from your experience, from things that are happening on the ground, what are these policies and how are they influencing the community?
So, I mean, I would also divide these into two issues. One of them would be issues within the Arab community, so internal challenges facing the Arab community. And then there are the more external ones that are vis-a-vis our relationship with the state. Not to say that the internal issues aren't influenced by the state. They're heavily influenced by the state. But there are also issues that are unique to the Arab community. One of them would be internal violence, as I would call it. Over the last generation, really, we have witnessed a very dangerous phenomenon that we did not witness before, and that is the rise of violence within the Arab community. I believe in 2017, over 70 people were killed in internal violence in the Arab community. That has to do mainly with the lack of law and order within Arab towns and villages and cities. And we use these terms, villages and towns, even though a lot of these, what we call villages and towns, have become cities nowadays, and that's part of the problem, what I call failed urbanization. And the other one has to do with what I would call land planning, or the lack of land planning in the Arab community. Basically, when we talk about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we usually focus on the ethnic dimensions or the national dimensions of the conflict, and we kind of forget all the other characteristics. One of the probably more important characteristics is the issue of land and who owns the land in the country. The Arab population is about 21% of the overall population of Israel, but yet we only own about 3% of the land. Obviously, from 1948 up until the 1970s, up until the late 1970s, there was massive land confiscation. Over 70% of private land was confiscated. And today, we own about only 3% of the land. So what you had was a population boom on the one hand, but land did not increase. And that led to a lot of problems. The main one would be what I would call urbanization failure, which led to certain social epidemics, such as violence that we are witnessing today, something that up until the 1990s, for example, was unheard of in the Arab community. And then you have the exogenous variable, which would be government policies and government planning. And here we, as I said, we've seen on the one hand, greater economic integration. You have a right-wing government which has actually increased budgets, which has allocated certain budgets for more economic development, but it's only economic development. We have not seen any kind of trying to the development of the Arab community at the political level or for greater integration within the political echelons of society, to say. So these are really the main challenges, the internal challenges within the Arab community, which again are heavily affected by state policies, but also need the Arab community itself to kind of take the lead on this issue. And then you have the issue of discrimination. Obviously, discrimination has always existed, but in the last generation, and with the rise of right-wing politics in Israel, or this new right in Israel, if you want to call it that way, we have seen even greater discrimination on all levels of society. So that's the challenges that I see.
Okay, so Fadi, before we go to you, I want to remind the audience, please feel free to type in your question at any point. I see them all in front of me. And whenever we get to the Q&A, I'm going to read them and we can answer them live. Our participants are going to answer them live. Okay, Fadi.
I completely agree that these are the two main issues or challenges facing the Palestinian community within Israel. One is urban development and land, and the other one is the internal violence or the development of organized crime, basically, that is not dealt with by the Israeli police. And here, I think it's less of an internal issue. It's more an issue of the lack of governance, of the government who have the tools, who have the police, the tools to face organized crime, and not doing it in the Arab towns and cities. We need to say that we are not part of shaping the policies in Israel. We are subject to the policies in Israel. We do have parliament members. We did have now 13 parliament members in the Knesset out of 120, but they were never in the government historically. And they can't be really in the government because we're talking about the context of Palestinians represented in the parliament of the Zionist Jewish state as it defined itself with the nation law, just reflecting that recently in Britain. So basically, the basic definition of the regime in Israel is the problem, in my opinion. Like, we are in a complexity of, well, in this, if this regime and the structure and mechanisms of this regime that reflects the state defining itself as a Jewish state is remains there, we cannot achieve civil equality. I think there is no way to disconnect achieving civil equality between Palestinians and Jews within Israel than talking about the meaning of the state defining itself as a Jewish Zionist state, which is based on the paradigm of this place belongs to us as an ethnic group. And you wouldn't hear any governmental officials saying the Palestinians. They would always refer to us as the minorities or as a bunch of ethnic groups that it's not clear how we got there while we are the indigenous population. When I talk about mechanisms going to the urban development issue, the state controls 93% of the lands in Israel. A lot of them were confiscated from the Palestinian population in the first hand. So in one hand, vast confiscations and or nationalizing, if you want. And on the other hand, allocation for Jews only, if I don't put it in a political correct term. The state built hundreds of towns that became cities, like Upper Nazareth, just next to Nazareth, and Carmel, and like around 700, more than 700 new towns and communities, while zero for the Palestinians. So the state also deals with the lands as kind of nation lands, means Jewish lands, while 20% of the population is Palestinian. And this is, again, based on the basic conception of the state on itself, that it's a state of Jews as an ethnocratic state, not really a democratic state. And as long as this doesn't change, it's going to reflect again and again in the state policy.
Okay, thank you both. I'm going to move on to the next question, which is kind of related to this. So I was wondering, so you noticed that in the recent elections, there was a lower voter turnout in the Arab community compared to 2015. So what do you think was the, what resulted in that? What caused that lower turnout compared to a previous year or to the previous elections?
Who should go?
I think in the last elections that we're going to have again now, there was an atmosphere, people lost hope in the system in one hand, and also people were very disappointed, talking about the Palestinian community within Israel. There were two main reasons for this disappointment. One is the right-wing government and high officials, including the prime minister, saying very racist things about their own citizens and so on. And the inability of representatives in the parliament to influence any policies. This is in one hand. And in the other hand, there was a unique experience this time with the joint list, where all the Palestinian political parties managed to unite in one list. And this gave a big hope, and this raised also the percentage of vote in the previous elections. And this time they didn't manage to agree on one list. And this was also a big part of the disappointment of the voters, and we saw that reflecting in the percentage of the voters. We went down from around 65% to 55%. So there is a danger that we go even under the 50%.
You have to unmute your mic.
Sorry about that. Put it simply, I think the Palestinian citizens in Israel, and particularly here, the youth, there's also a generational gap here, in my opinion. Put it simply, they don't believe the system works for them. on the one hand, and by that I mean that nobody amongst the Jewish political elite in Israel really cares about the Arab community. You can see it not only in the policies of the political parties, be it the center or left or whatever you want to call it. But by the way, even in the media, I mean, I was following the media very closely for the April elections. And when they talk about the Arab community, it is, I mean, these vague statements that don't mean much. You can tell that all these political reporters don't really understand what they're talking about. And the problem is they don't even have an interest in understanding what's going on. So the Arabs are what we would call in Hebrew, nocheach nifkat, to take words from the Nakba. They are there, but at the same time, they are not there. So that's one part of the issue. Arabs simply feel that the political system in Israel does not really care about them, their voices and their concerns. And at the same time, there's this huge, huge disappointment with the Arab parties and the Arab political elite in Israel. First of all, they're seen as ineffective. The fact that they cannot produce what we would call in political science, at least, pork, right? Gains for their own community. And at the same time, as Fadi said, the dissolution of the joint list angered a lot of people. Many people thought that the joint list was a new beginning, that finally the Arab community was able to unite under one political umbrella. There has always been this demand of a political unity. People simply do not understand why all these political parties are unable to unite, at least at the Knesset level. Because if you go back and look at the data, these parties vote 97% of the time, basically the same votes. So why is it that you are unable to unite into one list? And when people saw the petty politics and each party, fighting over one extra seat or one less seat, that angered a lot of people. And all these calls for boycotts, for boycotting the election, started to rise. And if you look at the data, actually, Arab citizens voted almost in similar numbers as Jewish citizens up until 1999. What happened after 1999? Well, the Second Intifada, which was a huge disappointment. And after the Second Intifada, we just started to see the trend go down, and still basically going down. So basically, this whole idea that I'm unable to affect the political system, the Jewish the Jewish political elite in the center and center left, who are quote unquote supposed to be our allies, at least at the political, at the theoretical level, who are supposed to be our allies, don't really care about us. And then our own political leadership is ineffective, and it uses a lot of its time in petty political fights that do not really help our community. I think these were the main reasons. And it was interesting because when you followed social media on election day, many people in the center left and supporters of the center left in Israel were very angry with the Arab community that why are you not voting? And you, because of you, Netanyahu is going to win another term. I think that shows the symptom or the real problem here is that the center left in Israel don't even understand the Palestinian community in Israel. They never had a genuine interest of understanding the Palestinian community. And why is it for them that somebody like Gantz is not really different than Netanyahu? Well, put it simply, Gantz didn't even campaign in the Arab community. I mean, people like Gantz would usually go to, I guess, the usual suspects from a Zionist perspective, who are the Druze or the Bedouin villages in the north, being those villages that, you know, go to the army. But these represent maybe 15% of the Arab community. They did not even try to talk to 85% of the Arab community. And then they were surprised why people did not come out and vote or have the same logic that many people in the center left had, that, well, you know, Gantz is better than Netanyahu, so therefore I'm not going to vote for Labor, I'm not going to vote for Meretz, I'm going to vote for Gantz. And then they were surprised that the Arab community, the Palestinian community in Israel, did not have that same kind of way of thinking. And it's not by chance they did not have that same kind of thinking, because these groups did not even outreach to the Arab community. So it's a mixture of all these things: lack of belief in the system, the fact that the center left did not outreach to the Arab community, and a huge, huge disappointment with our own political leadership.
Thank you, guys. I just want to remind the audience again, please feel free to type in your questions. I see them as they come, and then towards the end, we'll try to answer as many as possible. So I'm going to move on to the next question. And I think we need to bring in the nation state law and what role that played in also voter turnout in the Israeli election. But before I, let me just provide a bigger like question. During the election, we heard calls for boycott, and then we heard calls for like voting in droves in the community. So we had two camps. So I was wondering if you guys could rationalize both arguments. Why should you vote? Why shouldn't you vote? Which one do you think is more effective? And do you think this lower voter turnout and these camps are going to affect the next elections that is coming up in September?
Well, actually, I wrote an article about it, not in English. And the title was, within this discussion of boycotting or going to vote, and the title was, "The Knesset is not our national parliament as Palestinians, and boycott is not a work plan." And I think that the change for us is not going to come from the Knesset. Using the tool, the parliamentary tool, is important. We are part of the system whether we like it or not. We are advocating to change it from a system that represents one ethnic group with colonial mechanisms within it. When we talk about the nation law, I will refer to what I mean by colonial mechanisms that still exist, to a more just system that represents both communities and that share resources. But it's important to say that we are really far from that. Israel is still living under complete ignorance of the consequences for the Palestinian people when the state was established. And we can see that reflecting in all levels of policies, including educational policies. Most of Arabs and Jews live separately. Most of Jewish students go to Jewish schools, and they don't hear at all the Palestinian narrative. That's why they don't understand, as adults, the Palestinian community. And then it reflects in politics too. So it's all over the state mechanisms, this ignorance of the Nakba, of what happened to the Palestinian people as a main source of our reality today. To the state, to the nation state law, well, I think it didn't bring anything new. All was there in terms of the current system. The state law said Israel is the Jewish state only for Jews. The immigration laws in Israel since its establishment, more or less, are for Jews only. The allocation of land is done on ethnic basis too. The mechanism of allocation of land is giving Kakal 6 out of 14 representatives with no Arab representatives at all. And this is the body that decides on the policy of land allocation. Kakal declares very clearly on their website that the land need to be used for Jewish settlement in Israel. So the whole, all these deep mechanisms, let's say, of the regime in Israel, these are the real meaning of the state defining itself as a Jewish state. It's not a symbolic issue. It's a very practical issue on the ground.
Okay. So you asked to rationalize the arguments, to kind of introduce the audience to the two arguments for boycotting and for voting. So I'll try and represent faithfully both sides of this debate because it is, at the end of the day, an interesting debate. So, I mean, those who support voting, I think it's a little bit clear, especially for this audience. It's not like that we have the privilege or the luxury to boycott. It's not that we have other alternatives. It is important to be part of the system, to influence the system. There's actually another argument, which is a very interesting argument, and it makes a lot of sense to me, and it's that the Palestinian community in Israel is actually at the peak of its potential, and I emphasize the word here, potential influence on the Israeli political system. Demographically, we're now entering our demographic peak. By that, I mean more and more people are entering voting age, and that's going to continue for about 10 years. And then that's going to stop, mainly due to the Haredi growth demographically. So now we're basically a large community, and we're going to grow from about 21% to almost 27% of the population by 2035. And therefore, and then after 2035, we're going to go down a little bit. So it's important that we take advantage of the next 15, 16 years electorally to have more members of parliament influence the system from within. And also with the demographic rise of the Haredis in Israel, the ultra-Orthodox, actually, the economic potential of the Arab community grows. Put it simply, the state of Israel now is going to rely on the Arab community. Up until one generation ago, it was the other way around, where Arabs were not a big economic factor in the state. Now that we actually are a big economic factor, if Israel is interested in maintaining a high level of economic income, it will need a very economically vibrant Arab community. So why do we not take advantage of that? That's one argument for participating in the elections. Boycotting is also a little bit, it's somewhat clear, the fact that we're ineffective, the fact that nobody really cares about us. One argument obviously that came up in April was, well, you have the nation state law, right? You guys keep on telling us to vote, to participate, but every single time we get another slap on the face. So what we need to do is basically leave this system, expose Israel's true face to the world. There's a very famous saying in Israel, in Arabic, which means if it doesn't grow, then it won't shrink again. So we need to show Israel's true face to the world. We need to grow this boycott, and only then Israel would learn. So that basically more or less is the arguments of both sides. Let me just put in a few words about the nation state law, and this might actually be a little bit controversial, but this is my feeling. I think that the nation state law really received, it's not as big of an issue as people really think it is, because de facto, it didn't really change a lot on the ground. Now, there are two problematic issues with the nation state law. I mean, all of it is problematic, but there are two issues that are more problematic than other issues for me. One of them obviously is the symbolic issue of the Arabic language, the fact that the Arabic language no longer enjoys the same status that it did in the past. But the truth of the matter is that the Arabic language never really enjoyed any special status to begin with. One thing that really always used to anger me, I mean, I live in the United States at the moment, but you know, driving on the highway and seeing how the Arabic language is written, there's always these grammatical mistakes. Arabic is not always found everywhere on public institutions, et cetera, et cetera. So Arabic was really always, quote unquote, discriminated against. And here I wouldn't only blame the state, I would also blame my own community, that we never really respected our own language in the way that it should have been respected. And obviously the second issue is the fact that the nation state law prioritizes Jewish settlements. And by settlements, I don't mean settlements in the West Bank, I mean settlements in Israel. I mean, that's also the same word in Hebrew as well. So I'm not referring to the West Bank settlements. But the truth of the matter is that Israel has always prioritized Jewish settlements. As Fadi said, ever since 1948, there are over 700 Israeli towns, villages, and cities that were built, while zero Arab urban areas have been built. Actually, not only that, in Israel today, Jews have different methods of living. Jews can live in a kibbutz, and I'm guessing most of the attendees know what a kibbutz is, a moshav, and I'm guessing, again, most people know what a moshav is. People can live in cities, Jewish people, that is. They can live in villages. There's even this phenomenon that's growing, especially in the Negev, which is called Chavat Bodidim, or individual farms, where basically the state of Israel would subsidize for Jewish farmers to move to the Negev, create all these farms where they have massive land for only one family, while only on the other side of the road you have over 40 unrecognized Bedouin villages in the Negev itself. So this whole idea that the nation state law has kind of created a new reality is not really true, in my opinion. What the nation state law has done, it's more of a, it's more of a, how do we call it in English? A populist law, really, of a new political elite in Israel, and has much more to do within the cultural war amongst Jews in Israel about the state of Israel. What does it mean to be a Jewish state? That's really what the nation state law is. is about. It's more of a Jewish cultural war that obviously affects the Palestinian citizens in Israel themselves. That's my opinion on these. I know it's a little bit controversial. I'm pretty sure many people in circles around Partners for Progressive Israel have been against this nation state law, but in reality, it doesn't really change facts on the ground. It has much more to do with populist tendencies among this new political elite in Israel and this cultural war going on within Israeli Jews about what does it mean to be Israeli? What does it mean to have a Jewish state? Is it an ethnic component, a cultural component, or an ethno-religious component as this new political elite prioritizes? So those are just my thoughts on the issue.
We can't hear you, Anwar. You're muted.
It's unmuted. All right. Now you can hear me, huh? So thank you for those who have already typed in their questions. As a reminder, if you're watching this webinar and have a question, you can type it in to us. That's the only way we can get it. I saw people typing in the chat room. It's easier if you type in the Q&A box instead of the chat room area. And you guys, the panelists, can look at the chat. There's an interesting conversation going on. Fadi, maybe you should look at it too.
I saw the last one about the indigenous.
And we can address that in a little bit. So again, the Q&A is at the bottom of the monitor. You might have to move your mouse to find it. Click on there and then type in your question. Your microphones are turned off, so we can't hear you. The only way we can get your questions is if you type them in. So we'll do our best to answer as many questions as possible. The first thing, Fadi, would you like to address the indigenous, non-indigenous argument, or would you like to go to other questions and get back to this?
I'll just add something in short to the nation state law. I agree that up to now it was declarative, and as I said, it reflected the system in place. Mm-hmm. And I think that the opportunity here is to address the problematic things within the system and change them, and not just to go back, roll back, and have the nation state law canceled. Mm-hmm. The danger of the nation state law behind the declarative aspect of it is that the next government can take it and have legislations based on the spirit of the nation state law, racist legislations. Mm-hmm. And this is still to follow. But this is the big danger in the near future. I would like to refer to the question when Fadi refers to Jews as non-indigenous, that both denies our own history and puts an unnecessary wall between us. Can we see each other as indigenous and see a win-win for us all? So I would say, I don't like to argue about indigenous, not indigenous. For me, it's less a matter of what defines an indigenous. It's a matter of at a certain period of time, there was a group of people living in the space. Part of them were Jews, part of them were Christians, Muslims. And we can call them subjects of the Turkish Empire, of the Ottoman Empire at a certain period, or after the English Mandate later on, doesn't matter. These were people living in villages and towns in this space. And they were expelled. And they were expelled under a claim of the Jewish people coming back after 2,000 years from exile. Now, I don't ignore Jewish history in this place at all. I do believe that Jewish people were part of this space. I just don't think it's a legitimate claim of any nation or any people come and say, I want to expel other people living in a certain space because I have 2,000 years ago lived at that place. And I think this is the source of a problem. And after that, I don't care. Now, this is from one hand, like looking back to history. In terms of future, my aim is not to put walls. It's the other way around. I think this space needs to be shared between Jewish Israelis that live here today. Most of them are immigrants from the last, let's say, 100 years, but it doesn't matter. They're now here. And they see this place as their belonging. And Palestinians were paid a price of a problem they didn't cause or didn't participate in, happening mainly in Europe. And this need to be fixed. I think the ignorance of what happened to the Palestinians in establishing the State of Israel need to stop. And we need to recognize that there is a need to fix it and to have this place as a shared place for Palestinians and Jews together. Then we can argue about the process, which type of state is it going to be, what its name or its flag. This is minor. This is symbolic. The main issue here is who this place belongs to. And for me, it belongs to Palestinians and Jewish Israelis. And when I say Palestinians, I mean all Palestinians who were in this space at the time of the establishment of the State of Israel. Yeah, we can't hear you.
I can't hear you.
Again.
I keep forgetting that I'm muted. So hopefully this will answer the concerns of people in the chat. And I think it's important to clarify when we say non-Indigenous or Palestinians were Indigenous, we also consider Palestinian Jews who lived there before the establishment of the State of Israel, like anyone who lived there before 1948 happened and people were kicked out and all things happened. So that's what we mean by Indigenous versus non-Indigenous people. I'm assuming that's what you also tried to say, Fadi, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I have another question.
I call them Jewish Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's the other thing. We just refer to them as Jewish Palestinians. So I think there's a question from Lawrence talking. It's live now, and you all can see it. So the question is, what do panelists think of Palestinian citizens who stand for non-list parties? Would you tar them with the same brush or accept that some choose to work within the system for good or bad? Lastly, would you distinguish between, say, Isawi of Meretz versus the reactionary like Ayub of Likud?
I would distinguish between most normal human beings and Ayub Karra. more seriously, no, I mean, obviously people have different points of views and these points of views need to be, people need to represent their own points of views. I would distinguish between Meretz and the rest of the parties that identify as Zionist parties, because Meretz, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, personally, I do not vote for Meretz, but I think Meretz has made a long way in recognizing that there's a massive problem here. And that we need to fix that problem, and that Israeli identity and the identity of the Jewish state should be up for discussion. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean they would agree with somebody like me on everything, but nonetheless, they are willing to, you know, pass that Rubicon and admit that there is a huge problem with how the state identifies itself. So I know, I think somebody like Isawi Frej is somebody who I would personally consider him to be part of the mainstream of the Arab community in Israel, especially nowadays where there are more and more people who would agree with him. I think the fact that Meretz received a lot of votes from the Arab community is not by chance. I think there are a lot of citizens, and again, on the personal level, I wouldn't agree with them entirely, but I do understand where they're coming from, that our we should be focused more on the civil issue. We should be focusing on making an Israeli public sphere more inclusive. However, I do think that Meretz is the only exception that does not represent the trend in Israel. I mean, what we saw with Zoher Bahrlul and Labor, for some reason, people always thought that the Labor Party in Israel is somehow this kind of movement that can represent all of Israeli society. I do not think so. I think going from Labor and all the way to the right, you have the same kind of problem, that these movements and these people do think that excluding the Palestinian citizens of Israel is part of the norm, and that the Palestinian citizens of Israel should join under our terms and not under the way they see themselves. And by that, they're basically excluding the Palestinian community in Israel. So I would argue that Meretz is actually a special case scenario that does not represent the trend that is going on within the Jewish community in Israel. So no, I do not have a problem with somebody like Isawi Frej, but I would have a problem with people like Ghadir Mreah, who's part of Blue and White, Zoher Bahlul, who tried something new, We gave him the benefit of the doubt, but look what happened eventually. He was not even accepted in the Labour Party itself. Even Ghalib Majadli, who was the first Arab minister in Israel, first Arab Muslim minister in Israel, there was a Druze minister before that, also had a lot of problems when he identified himself as a Palestinian citizen of Israel. And that's something relatively new for Arab members of the Labour Party. So I do not have a problem with it. I think it's a... I actually think that in certain aspects, they might be able to be influential in certain ways that the members of the joint list are not. And I'm very excited for this new, just yesterday it was announced that Mossi Raz and Issawi Frege are going to run together as joint heads of Meretz. It'll be interesting to see how this works out. I think it's going to be somewhat problematic, especially that Mossi Raz, who's somebody that I really, really appreciate, I still think that he represents a segment, even within Meretz, that is not still very popular, but it is definitely, without a doubt, very interesting, and we'll see how where things lead to.
About Jewish Arab partnership, for instance, going to list fusion, and what do you guys think about it? Is it possible? Do you think about the Arab community? Can it be appealing to the Arab community more than just an Arab list that is the joint list?
Can you repeat the question? There was some noise in the background.
Okay, so I have lots of questions about Arab-Jewish partnerships, specifically, like, for instance, joint list merits joining together, or like creating some sort of Jewish-Arab partnership that is more or goes beyond the joint list that appeals to the Palestinian community. So do you think that's possible? Do you think that could work? Or do you think that could be problematic and it wouldn't get any support?
I think we should look at it sociologically. Up to the 80s, around 50% of the Arab population was voting to Zionist parties, the Labour Party, Maarach at that time, some to the Likud, some to Shas. And it's hard to understand it in terms of, you know, people have different opinions, so they choose their political choices. We need to understand the power relations, and that we're talking about a minority who don't participate in governance, and that is a subject to the state policy, and looked at not as a legitimate citizens, more as a fifth column or as a danger, a demographic danger to the state. And then we can understand why practically sometimes people say, oh, if I vote to somebody in the Labour Party, he can help me with this and that because he has access to the state power. Maybe we can get a little bit of more budgets. Maybe we can get better infrastructure. Maybe we can get a sewage system and so on. So it's not a vote that reflects, you know, ideological or when a Palestinian votes to a Zionist party, it's not a vote that reflects really what he thinks or an ideological belief of that person. So that's why I'm saying we need to look at it from a sociological perspective. And for me, if we look at the political parties scene in Israel, we have... Zionist Jewish parties from the extreme right to Meretz, which is within the Israeli political discourse, is the most extreme left, let's say. But that's within the Jewish Zionist parties. And then we have the Arab parties, and there is a variety there too. And there is one Arab Jewish party historically, which is based on the Communist Party and Jabha later on, the front. And I think if we talk about Arab-Jewish partnership, it needs to be reflected on the agenda. And I think Meretz went a good way in the right direction, but it still didn't cross the main line for Arab-Jewish partnership, a real Arab-Jewish partnership to exist and to have a joint agenda, which is the line of Zionism. Meretz still defines itself as a Zionist party, and a Palestinian representative in Meretz would be part of a Zionist Jewish party, the way it defines itself. Of course, it's much more liberal than other parties. It has some progressive positions that I share with and other Palestinian parties share with merits, but still they didn't cross that line. And for me, if we want to look at the future and shape a shared agenda of how this place would be a shared place, merits or other parties that want to be joint parties need to cross the line of Zionism. And I don't mean by Zionism, let's say, like there are certain definitions of Zionism that I heard that I don't have problem with. Like, you know, it's just loving the space or feeling belonging. I don't have any problem with that. The main problem with Zionism is the basic paradigm that we talked about before, that this place belongs exclusively to the Jewish people, as it was reflected in the nation law.
Thayer, do you have anything to add to this?
Regarding the alliance or feud between joint list and merits, I think that it might receive some traction amongst the Arab population, but I don't think it would receive a lot of traction amongst the Jewish community. And therefore, that's why I would mainly think it's not the best of ideas. Maybe it's a little bit too soon. The differences are still there. I mean, I don't really see, as long as the conflict and the occupation continue, it would create a lot of problems, both for merits and for the joint list itself. There are still issues that clearly divide the two. The fact that Meretz is still a Zionist party and defines itself as such. I think one of the issues that made Meretz move a little bit more to the left, in my opinion, is the fact that Meretz itself does not, maybe not no longer, but to a large extent cannot identify with this new form of Zionism that's taking place in Israel, which is much more ethno-religious, which focuses much more on conservative values. And many people in Meretz are starting to find themselves outside of this consensus about Zionism that was once there. So, I mean, if this continues and looking at demographic trends, it looks like it's going to continue. Maybe 5-10 years down the road, it would make much more sense. And I wouldn't think it makes a lot of sense for Meretz to unite with all of the elements within the Arab community. There are elements within the Arab community that still do not find a similar page with Meretz, let's put it that way, whether it's for religious conservative reasons, such as in the case of the Islamic movement, or nationalist reasons, such as in the case of Balad. But I can see in the long run, 5-10 years from now, a realignment in the map of the Arab community in Israel, realignment in the political map, that is, and then maybe Meretz and or some elements of Meretz and some elements of Hadash, Jabha, can come together and create some kind of new discourse in Israel. But at the meantime, I don't think it would benefit Meretz, nor would it benefit the joint list. It might benefit the joint list more than Meretz in that sense.
Okay. It's 1:30 now almost. I know that our time is up. I was wondering if we could maybe answer one question really quickly. It's Deborah's question, which says, aside from comprehensive peace plan, what would be the single most important step the Israeli government could take now to help like or fix some of the problems you listed among the Palestinian community in Israel?
In terms of policy or in terms of like specific policies or?
I think we can start with specific policies.
Well, in terms of specific policies, as we mentioned before, the main two issues are arms and organized crime within the Palestinian community, and that the state has the tools to deal with that when there is a will. We have good examples of the state facing organized crime in Jewish cities like Netanya, and I'm taking control over the problem while it's not dealt with in the Arab community. And in the land issue, I think there is much more focus on budgets and the allocation of budgets than about the basic injustice in the division of land. Palestinian jurisdiction areas are 2.5% out of the whole lands of what's within the borders of Israel. while the Palestinian population is 20%. And the focus need to be shifted to that area, and not only to budgets and intensifying building higher and higher within the Palestinian communities.
I mean, similar. It should probably be focusing on budget allocations and trying to improve the life of Arab citizens more. But I would still focus on the fact that without comprehensive peace between Israel and Palestine, it would be very, very hard to achieve anything meaningful, in my opinion.
I'm not sure Netanyahu is going to agree with you, but
yeah.
We can't hear you, Anwar. You're muted.
Sorry again. We have lots of questions that we didn't give the chance to answer. Questions about women's issues in the Arab community, lack of representation, questions about is there resistance? I think it was Dan who asked that if there's a resistance in the Arab community about normalizing ties with Israel, and is it getting harder to mobilize Palestinian citizens of Israel to engage in the work of civil society groups trying to build shared society like Givat Chaviva? So I know we're past the time, but maybe we can take a minute to answer this question and then we can close.
Maybe you should also answer the woman's question since your PhD was on women in politics.
Yeah, that, I feel like we need another webinar for that.
Without a doubt.
So any of you want to address this question?
Fadi, you're the one who works in the NGO world. You go for it.
I didn't hear the question well. You are muted again, Anwar.
It is saying, is it getting harder to mobilize Palestinian citizens of Israel to engage in the work of civil society groups trying to build a shared society like Givat Chaviva?
The simple answer is yes, it is harder. There is less and less belief in working for a shared society. There is less and less belief in that there is, the famous sentence of Barak, there is no partner. So there is a belief within the Palestinian community that there is no partner on the other side. And that it's used each time you are working in a joint group or in a joint project or in a joint organization, you are part of normalizing the injustice. And it's used kind of to show a better face of Israel than it is. So there is more, let's say, growing discourse within the Palestinian community that you need to work uninationally and you need to build yourself internally and to empower the community from within before going to work for joint projects and so on. So part of it is kind of strategic or tactic, but part of it is part of disappointment of, there is nobody to work with, there is no chance in a shared agenda. But there are many groups that do that.
So it's time to bring this conversation to an end. Fer and Fadi, thank you very much for participating and sharing your thoughts on the questions and the issues. You guys now have 1 minute to give a concluding statement, and then we'll end this session.
To conclude, I don't know. I mean, since we're back in election season again for the second time this year, I guess one thing to look out for on Arab-Jewish relations in Israel is whether, first of all, if the joint list comes back again, and everybody expects it to come back again, because if not, many people believe it would simply be political suicide on the part of the Arab parties. And after that, are they able to kind of build something new with some partners within the Jewish community? And when I mean that, I'm specifically focusing on Meretz. Maybe some left-wing elements within labor, depending on how big labor would be. Therefore, I actually think that it's in the interest of everybody that labor and Meretz do unite. I think that would actually kind of strengthen the more left-wing voices within labor itself. So that's definitely something to look out for. We might, and again, I am pessimistic, but we might be witnessing something new in Arab-Jewish cooperation at the political level in Israel. So that's definitely something worth looking at. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I think if we look at the macro, I think we are in an interesting period. In one hand, there is a right-wing government. Things doesn't look like going to a more optimistic direction. I think for the long run, we are going to the death of the two-state solution and to starting talking about one space for both in one state, including the West Bank and Gaza. And I think this discourse is gonna be more and more there in the future. I'm like, for the long term, I think this period of time now doesn't look very optimistic. I am optimistic for the long term because I don't think that things are more clear now. I think there is a lot of people who are reconsidering their perceptions toward the situation in Israel and Palestine, and that it's going to move forward at a certain point to a direction. And thank you for having us. We can't hear you again.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation with Israel and Palestine. I want to thank our panelists, Fer and Fadi. Also, thank you to the staff of Partners for Progressive Israel for their work in making this discussion happen. You can go to progressiveisrael.org to learn more about Partners for Progressive Israel and their future programs. Thanks. Goodbye. I think we're not.